You know, as we kind of think about our lives, you know, do we find a point in our lives when we're just done? Like, I've done everything I need to do. There's nothing left for me to do. I've achieved all my goals. I've done all the things I wanted. Is life just done at some point? You just got to sleep through the rest of it? I mean, obviously, our whole lives shouldn't be done. You know, I mean, parts of our life, it's kind of okay to be done, right? Our professional lives. I mean, no matter how much you love what you do for a living, you know, at some point, you might want to stop, right? I mean, again, no matter how much you love what you do for a living, part of the reason you go to work is a means to an end. You got to pay your bills, right? So if you reach a point in your life where you've got the support and the resources in place that you need, you can start working less or, in some cases, stop working altogether. So in our professional lives, it's okay to be done. It makes sense to be done at some point. But what about the other parts of our lives? Like, what about our personal relationships? What about our faith lives? Is it okay to just be done at some point? Now, what led me to kind of ask that question was a couple months ago, I got a call from another minister that I know who I hadn't talked to probably like close to 2 years. And he'd heard that I had moved here to UCP. So he called me up just to kind of ask, you know, how's it going? How am I doing? You know, and I was kind of happy to tell him that I think it's going pretty well. You'd probably want to ask the folks who were there, but I think it's going pretty well. You know, I'm excited about what we're doing. I'm excited about what the future holds. I'm excited about the things we're doing, the things that we'll get to do. So, you know, being polite, I said, so how are things going with you in your church? Now, he's been at the same church for a very long period of time. And his answer, be quite honest, his answer kind of rocked me. He said, well, me and the board have sat down together, and we've decided that we're done. Now, they're not discontinuing church. They're still going to have church each week, but they've decided that there's just no way to be successful long term. So we're going to stop trying. That we're just going to come to church every Sunday, the folks who are here, you know, and we've got the ability to keep running as long as we think they're going to live. And so we'll just keep having church until none of those folks can come anymore. And then we're done. The end. The church is closed. I'm not making any of that up. That is me summarizing that conversation. Now, what I find interesting is that, you know, and I don't want to judge their choice. I'm not in their position. But what I do find interesting is that they explicitly made the choice to be done. But I wonder how often do we kind of implicitly get there, you know, as individuals or as an organization, or, you know, any organization, not just this one, right? That do we start going about our lives in such a way, start going about our mission in such a way that we're kind of proceeding as if we're done? We just never really decided to make that the case. So this week we're continuing the series that we kicked off last week, right? Rewind, pause, or fast forward. And as you recall, I kind of made the point that I think that how we pursue our lives pretty much always fall into one of these buckets. Now, there'll be details will be different depending on what you're doing, but ultimately you're either in rewind, meaning that you're very connected to the past, right? Either you're pursuing things, going, wow, I want things to be like they used to be, or maybe there's some baggage you're bringing from your past you can't break free of. You know, if you've had other things that are kind of holding on to you, that's kind of living in rewind. Right? Pause is this idea that, you know what? You know, it can come a couple of ways. You know, I want things just to stay like they are right now. I want things to be left alone. But pause can also just be, you know what? I'm not really going to think about it. I'm just going to do what I do. I'm kind of done trying. And then fast forward is, you know, well, no, I want to go forward. You know, I want to pursue what's available. I want to do the things that I can do. I want to be an active part of shaping and building the future, even if it's a future that I might not be around for. I think it's that important. And so those, I think, are really the three choices. And you may recall last week I mentioned that you may go, well, wait a minute, what about just pushing play? Like, can I just push play? Well, I think that the idea in this metaphor is that if you just push play, you're saying that I'm just going to do what I do, and it's going to end up how it ends up. So whether you decide to or not, whether I decide to or not, we all will ultimately live in one of those three modes. Rewind, pause, or fast forward. If we think we've just pushed play, we're still heading in one of those directions. So back to this idea of what are we doing? So this week I want to kind of look at this idea of choosing to go on pause or living in pause. Right? And as I said, sometimes we choose it. Sometimes we just kind of end up here. And I think the one place where it is reasonable is our professional lives. But thinking about those other parts of our lives I've talked about, in your personal life, in my personal life, do we want to reach a point where we stop investing in our relationships? Do we want to reach a point where we stop kind of trying to do our best to make our relationships as healthy as they can be? And Bonnie and I have been together for knocking on 30 years. She should know I love her by now. I don't have to tell her anymore, right? You know, the old joke, I told her on the day we got married. What's the big deal, right? But obviously, I want to invest in that relationship. If I stop investing in it, it's not going to be a very healthy relationship. You know, and as I talk about our relationship with God, do we want to be in an active relationship with God? Or, you know, I'm saved, I've punched my ticket to heaven, I'm good. I don't have to think about that anymore. Right? We don't want those things to ever go on pause. Now, remember that last week we kind of kicked off the series by looking at this idea of rewind, having this rewind mindset. And we spent a lot of time on this idea that it manifests in different ways. Right, that sometimes being in rewind is that, you know, we really wish things could go back to the way they used to be. Sometimes we feel that way. I mean, I think all of us have some point in our lives where we kind of wish some things could go back like they used to be. But often we bring things from our past with us that we're just not able to let go of things. Right, and some of those things we choose to bring with us, some of those are things that we actually carry with us, not really wanting to, but we can't break free of them. And as we kicked off, we actually looked at kind of two people from the book of Genesis, right? We looked at Abraham, and we looked at his nephew, Lot. And when we met Abraham, we found that God had made this incredible promise to Abraham. Do you remember what the promise to Abraham was? That God would bless the entire world through Abraham. But in order for Abraham to experience that, he had to do two things, right? He had to leave, and he had to go. In other words, he had to leave some things behind and go where God said he would show him. But the thing that was kind of interesting, God didn't give him a specific destination. Basically, God said, follow me, walk with me, and then you will discover that place. So he had to make the decision to leave what made him comfortable, right? His father's family, his father's kind of locale, kind of like his hometown in a sense. And he was supposed to leave all that behind and head out. But remember that he did part of it. He actually left kind of his hometown, but he didn't leave Lot behind. And remember that one of the instructions was leave your father's family. In other words, you know, bring your wife and the things that are your family, but your father's family, your cousins, your nephews, those sort of things, don't bring them with you. But he couldn't quite do it, right? He tried to hold on to his past. And we don't know why he brought Lot, but we do know what the results of bringing Lot was. That he was not able to progress as quickly as he could have because he was carrying the baggage from the past, because in this sense, Lot was kind of baggage, right? Because it was creating turmoil. It was creating stress, right? There was kind of fighting going on between them and their staffs. And that really kind of demonstrates this idea that, well, sometimes when we try to bring our past with us, we're never going to get where God is calling us to as fast as we could get there if we keep holding on to the past. But then Lot showed us a different side of things. Remember that when Abraham and Lot split up, and they finally split up so that Abraham can kind of head off on the journey God has called him to, Lot saw something kind of shiny off to the side. He saw the city of Sodom. And he said, yeah, I'm just going to get near it. I'm not going to go in. I'm just going to check it out from a distance. But then ultimately he moved into the city. And we know he lived there long enough to get married and have two daughters who were old enough to get married. So that place became part of his new past. And remember that Sodom was an incredibly dysfunctional city. And as Lot spent time in that city, he picked up that dysfunction. And when it was time to leave, because he becomes informed that God is going to destroy that city. So Lot knows for a fact that he is headed for destruction if he stays there. What happens? He struggles to leave. He struggles to leave, even though knowing destruction is coming. And then finally, when he, you know, effectively is kind of pulled out, he keeps hanging on to that dysfunction. He seems unable to break free of it. And Lot demonstrates for us what happens is that when we have dysfunction in our past, if we don't do the work to get free of it, it holds us back. Because we know that Lot kind of leaves the city and never really does anything after that. Lot gets stuck. But the thing I want us to see this week is that although it may be kind of easy or easier to see that rewind mindset, it's fairly easy to see how that would get us stuck, right? If we're looking at the past, holding on to the past, letting the past hold on to us, of course that's going to lead to us being stuck. But what I want to talk about today is the fact that this idea of being on pause will also cause us to get stuck. It will keep us from living out the life that God calls us to. Because again, this pause mindset is that either I want to just keep things as they are, or you know what? I'm just going to stop trying. I'm going to say that the work is too hard. I've done enough. I've done my part. I don't want to deal with it anymore. And so when we think about this idea of avoiding this pause mindset, right? This is something we want to really make sure we keep out of our faith lives individually. And it's certainly something that we want to make sure we don't do in our churches. And interestingly, when we look at the story of Lot and Sodom, that story actually shows us how God feels about us deciding to just pause, to just stop trying in our faith lives, to stop trying as a church. Because if you've grown up in church, you have almost definitely know the story of Sodom, or often as it's called, Sodom and Gomorrah. Right? And the narrative tells us that God decides to destroy the city. And if you grew up in church, you were probably told the reason that God decided to destroy the city. But what I'll say about my own life is that when I got into the Bible and I started reading things more for myself, when I read, and we'll cover that in just a second, the reason I was given was tied to sexual sin. But that's not what the Bible actually tells us. Because the prophet Ezekiel actually describes explicitly why Sodom was destroyed. So the prophet Ezekiel, speaking on behalf of God, says this: "Behold, this was the guilt of your sister Sodom. She and her daughters had pride, excess of food, and prosperous ease, but did not aid the poor and the needy. They were haughty," in other words, self-important, right? "They were haughty and did an abomination before me, so I removed them when I saw it." So Ezekiel, speaking as a prophet of God, says that the problem with the city of Sodom was once they had everything they needed, they stopped caring about anybody else. And that all the things that we learn about that they do later down the line happened because it started with, "I'm good. It's not my responsibility to care for anybody else." That once I'm good, I don't have a responsibility to anyone else. So everything I have in my life that's good is for me. You know, if I want to kind of do a little something here and there because it makes me feel good, maybe I'll do that. But according to Ezekiel, God looked at that mindset and said, "That's something I have no patience for. That's something I'm not going to tolerate." And so Ezekiel tells us that that path of once I've gotten what I need and I have everything I need and I don't care about what happens to other people and I don't make it a part of my life to care for those who have needs, that's a path to destruction. Now, why was Ezekiel talking about that? Because Ezekiel actually lived many centuries after the story of Abraham and Lot. So why is he, you know, hundreds of years, actually, I think close to 1,000 years later, talking about this? Because Ezekiel was part of the descendants of Abraham. Right? Remember that Abraham had Isaac as a son, then he had Jacob, Jacob had the 12 sons who became the tribes of Israel. So Ezekiel is part of the tribes of Israel. And what he's talking to are the other people who are part of the tribes of Israel. Remember that Abraham was told that he was a blessing, so he could be a blessing. Well, what Ezekiel finds is himself living in a time where the descendants of Abraham have adopted that same mindset of, well, God has blessed us. We got God on our side. It doesn't matter what we do. We don't have to care about other people. We're special. We don't have those kinds of responsibility. We're the people of God. He takes care of all that stuff. That's not our concern. And what Ezekiel wants them to know, and what I think God wants us to know, is that is the path to destruction. That if we focus just on what we have and don't care about those around us, if we don't go out of our way to support the needs of the people around us, according to Ezekiel, pointing back to Genesis, that's the path of destruction. And that, in reality, is what we do when we live on pause. If we say, I'm good, and again, I'm not talking about our jobs, retiring from our jobs, but if I say I'm good, I'm not going to invest in my relationships, I'm not going to invest in my relationship with God, I'm not going to make it a critical part of my life to be continually serving people, doing what I can. Ezekiel says that's the path of destruction. But now Abraham, when we looked at Abraham, he shows us the alternative, right? Because remember, Abraham was told that he was blessed to be a blessing, that God would bless the whole world through him. And the thing I always love about Abraham is that Abraham gets things wrong over and over again, but always finds his way back on track. And that's true for all our lives. We're always going to get things wrong. We're not called to live perfect lives. But when we realize we're off track, we get back on track. Right? And so the author of Genesis describes for us kind of how God expected Abraham to be a blessing to the people around him. Says, this is speaking on behalf of God, right? For I have chosen him, in other words, I've chosen Abraham, so that he will direct his children and his household after him to keep the way of the Lord by doing what is right and just. So the Lord will bring about for Abraham what he promised him. In other words, if Abraham was going to be the person through whom God blessed all the world, the process is to teach his children about the ways of God, but also demonstrated to the household around him and the households that follow. In other words, his sphere of influence, right? Those are people in his life that he could actually interact with. But how was he supposed to actually show them the ways of God? He was to achieve it by what he does, right? By doing what is right and just. In other words, by making his priority what is God's priority. And God's priority is people and caring for people. So in order for Abraham to live out that promise that God put into his life, what Abraham had to do was let his actions demonstrate the love of God, to have the conscious idea and effort to care for the people around him, meeting their needs, assuring that justice is maintained as well as he can when someone is weak and down. Stand up for them. Right, we actually know he does that. He actually goes to war to save Lot because Lot got himself in trouble. So he stands up for justice and well-being. And so now, I guess the question is that even though Abraham struggled and he got off track and he got back on track, does the promise to Abraham actually come to fruition? And it does. Because the promise was that God would bless the whole world through Abraham. Well, again, we have Abraham, his son Isaac, his son Jacob, the 12 tribes. One of those tribes is Judah. Right? So Jesus is born through the tribe of Judah. So with the birth, life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, the promise that was made to Abraham is fulfilled. Right? That, what did Jesus do? Right? Jesus brought us freedom. Right, he freed us from the requirements of the law. Right, we no longer live under the Old Testament and have to do things like animal sacrifices and all those sort of things. Instead, Jesus gave us a relationship with God that comes through faith. Right, by expressing our faith in God through Jesus, We have a path to life. We have a path to eternal life, right? That Jesus blesses with this kind of newfound freedom, right? That when he calls us into freedom, he gives us freedom. He has blessed us. But the fact that Jesus actually answered the promise to Abraham and gives us freedom, that doesn't mean that the work is all done. It doesn't mean that our work is all done, right? Because if Jesus has blessed us, and what we know about God is that God blesses you to be a blessing. Well, if God through Jesus has blessed us, you're blessed to be a blessing. You're blessed to actually reach into other people's lives. You're blessed to care for other people, right? And Jesus makes that really clear, that as Jesus is wrapping up his earthly ministry, and as he actually turns the whole deal over to his disciples, Jesus says this: You will receive power when the Holy Spirit comes on you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. So God, through Jesus, gives us the Holy Spirit, meaning that the actual power of God dwells within us. And Jesus ushered in the kingdom of God, right? That somehow the kingdom of God is already here. It's not in its fullness, but it's already here, and that came through Jesus. Right, that as we receive those things, that you are called, I am called to share the message of Jesus. Just as Abraham was called to share that message with his sphere of influence, you and I are called to actually share that in our area of influence, to do the things that we are called into. So the question is, what does that mean? Well, that's what Jesus is talking about when he calls people disciples. Right? Disciples are the people who make the choice to actually take what Jesus said seriously, right? To share the message of who he is near and far. And it's demonstrated over and over again. Jesus shows us what that looks like. It's actually caring about people, right? And being a disciple of Jesus doesn't come with an expiration date, right? That being a disciple is not something that Jesus ever expects us to be on pause about. Jesus calls us to be on the move, to be intentional, to be actually out there living our lives in such a way that we glorify God. You know, one of the things that I struggle with when I see people get on TV and call themselves Christians and become very angry and prideful and elitist, I just don't understand where the model from that even comes from. Right? That Jesus made it incredibly clear that being a disciple is not about pride, it's not about elitism. Right, it's about being a servant. How do I know that? Because Jesus, the one who deserved to receive everything, lived as a servant. Right, he served people. We are called to serve people. That we are called to, being a disciple means that we care about people. We do good for people. That we actually share the message of Jesus. Sometimes we talk when we do it, but most often we should be active and supporting people. That's how we show the message of Jesus, right? That's how we share the love of God, right? Being prepared to talk about those things when it comes up. But it's mostly through action. And the time to stop doing that never comes. Now, that doesn't mean that we never reach a point in our lives where we need to slow down, right? As we age, sometimes we need to slow down. You know, sometimes when we have health issues, right, we need to slow down. You know, again, this eye thing is kind of minor. I can't believe how, like, in my way it is. You know, so I do the best I can. You know, you do the best you can in your life when you have things going on. But here's one of the things that I've learned kind of in my years is that when we have challenges in our life, the things that we think are actually inhibiting us from doing the work we need to do, oftentimes those are the exact things that God uses to open the door to reach other people, to reach new people. So just because you're struggling with something, right, don't think that maybe God couldn't work through this somehow. Right? Again, I'm not trying to minimize anyone's suffering or pain. I'm simply saying that sometimes in our struggle, God will move through those struggles to help us reach other people. Now, one of the things that Jesus made really clear during his earthly ministry is that being a disciple of Jesus was not going to be easy. Right? It was not going to be something that you just kind of, achieve, sit back, and relax. That Jesus made it really clear that he expects us to do something, and it's going to be hard sometimes. And throughout the Gospels, we see that. But the Gospel writer Matthew actually captures for us a couple of kind of really clear scenarios that kind of shows what Jesus tells us the life of a disciple is. And this is really cool. I enjoy this because this is really early in Jesus' earthly ministry, that he's kind of been, he's declared himself, he's beginning his ministry. And what's happening is that as he begins his ministry, crowds of people start to follow him. You know, they start to hear his teaching, they start to see the miracles. And as they start to follow him, in one particular situation, the crowds are getting so big and so aggressive that Jesus actually turns to his disciples and says, hey, there's a boat over there. Let's get in the boat and let's kind of get to the other side where it's safe. Now, as he does that, Matthew records for us the reactions of some of the people who were kind of part of that crowd, people who kind of considered themselves disciples. So it says that then a teacher of the law came to Jesus and said, teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. Jesus replied, foxes have dens, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Now, it's interesting that a teacher of religious law would mean someone who was deeply religious. And he'd been kind of living under the temple system, which was kind of the way they practice it, someone like him would have been lifted up above other people, sitting back, relaxing, enjoying his position. And so he goes up to Jesus and says, hey, man, I'll follow you wherever you go. And Jesus' response, right, about, you know, foxes and birds, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. Jesus isn't talking about being, you know, poor. What Jesus is talking about is he doesn't have a steady home. That Jesus doesn't have a home because he is always on the move. And what the point that he's making is that the life of a disciple is not a life of comfort. It's not a life of stability. It is a life of always being on the move, or at least being willing to be on the move. That the life of a disciple of Jesus involves uncertainty. It involves instability. That the work will sometimes take you in places where you're not as comfortable as you'd like to be. And Jesus says, when the work takes you there, you go there. That's what it means to be my disciple. Now, we have no idea if that guy decided to get into the boat after he heard that. But it does seem that when Jesus said that, it caused another disciple to kind of have second thoughts. Because immediately following that, Matthew tells us, another disciple said to Jesus, Lord, first let me go and bury my father. But Jesus told him, follow me and let the dead bury their own dead. That sounds compassionate, right? Now, is Jesus saying to this guy, this mourning person whose father has just died, you cannot go bury your father? That's not what he's saying. He's not what he's saying. The commentaries around this point out that there are probably one of two things going on, and they kind of fundamentally boil down to the same thing. The most likely thing that's going on is this guy is the firstborn son, and his father's not dead or even dying. But the cultural tradition of the time was that the oldest son stayed with the family until the father died so that he could kind of take care of any business or anything that needed to be dealt with when that event happened. So he might be actually asked to be let off the hook for years. And so what he's saying to Jesus is like, wow, you know, I love what you're doing. Great stuff. I'd love to join you, but I've got another responsibility over here. You know, once I'm done with that one and any others that might come up, I'm with you. I'm with you all the way. Now, that's one interpretation. The other possibility is that the gentleman's father has died sometime in the past year. Because their tradition was, their religious tradition, was that when someone died. Now, remember that this is in the Middle East. The ground is hard, hard to dig in. There's not a lot of it. So their tradition was that when you died, they buried you, and they left you in the ground for about a year. Give you time to decompose. And at the end of a year, they would dig up your bones, and they would put in what's called an ossuary. It's actually a cave that is kind of a family kind of family cave, that you take all the bones of everyone in the family and you store them there after they die. And so the guy is saying is that, you know, my dad died, you know, a few months ago, and, you know, in a few more months, I'm expected to go do something, so I'd love to go with you, but I've got to do that. In either case, it boils down to the same thing, that Jesus is calling them to follow him and go where he goes, and they're saying that, I'd love to, but I can't right now. Now, one of the things to be really clear, right, is that Jesus is not saying, right, he is not saying that you do not honor your parents, right? The Bible is abundantly clear that you honor your parents, right? In the New Testament, in the Old Testament, he's not saying you don't honor your parents. He's not saying you should abandon your family. You don't abandon your spouse. You don't abandon your kids. But what Jesus is actually reading through the situation, that the guy is using this as a convenient excuse for why he doesn't want to follow. And what it shows for us, though, is that if we choose to be a disciple of Jesus, there will be tension in our lives. We will have tension between the call that Jesus puts on our lives and other people's expectations of us. Right? Sometimes there'll be family tensions. Sometimes there'll be tension with your friends. You know, sometimes, you know, it could even be tension with religious traditions that you've grown up with. That as you kind of read the Bible more closely, and you particularly as you dig into the New Testament more closely, you start to realize that there are religious traditions that you've been taught that just don't line up with what Jesus teaches. And so Jesus is saying that, yeah, that's the life of a disciple, that there's just tension sometimes. And we're called to follow him anyway. Now, as Jesus does all this, and he gives these really inspiring speeches about following him, you know, many of his disciples do decide to follow him. So they actually get in the boat and so they can go across the lake and they travel with Jesus. So now they've kind of looked at the situation, right? To use Bible language, they've counted the cost, what's it going to take, and they decide to follow him. And what was their reward for choosing to follow Jesus? Suddenly a furious storm came up on the lake, so the waves swept over the boat, but Jesus was sleeping. So their reward was terrifying fear. That's redundant. Being terrified and fearful because they followed Jesus. And sometimes that's what it's like. Right? There is no promise that the journey of being a disciple is easy. That we will all have times. If you choose to actually live as a disciple of Jesus, right? Not as a fan, not as a subtle follower, but as a disciple. If we choose to live that way, there will be fear. There you will. You will have times where you're dead on scared. Right? When I transitioned out of my work life into this life, I was scared to death. This was way earlier than I had planned to retire from work. Right? There will be tension in your life sometimes. Right? That there will be times where you feel exhausted. I guarantee that if you're following Jesus, there will be times where you feel unsettled and uncertain, and you're not even sure what you're supposed to do. That's why there is such a temptation to push pause. That when we choose to live as a disciple, there are times where we feel like, man, I've just done enough. I don't feel like I can do this anymore. But when it comes to our faith lives, when it comes to being a church, I don't think we get to do that. I mean, you can do what you want. God will allow you to do whatever you want. But I don't think we're ever meant to do that. And then one of the things that we have to realize is that as a church, avoiding pushing pause is really hard. Because the longer a church exists, the list of, well, we've always done it that way, gets longer and longer and longer. And what ends up happening is that the world around us changes and the culture around us changes. Now, we don't want to kind of morph to whatever the world and the culture need, but we don't want to morph to whatever the world and culture are, but we do need to be mindful of how we engage with the world around us, how we engage with the culture around us, that if we are called to share the message of Jesus with our sphere of influence, we've got to communicate it in a way that people can connect with it. So we have to choose not just to continue to be a disciple, but being a disciple means that we learn and we evolve and we change. You know, and that's something that I, you know, quite frankly, as I received that phone call that I mentioned at the beginning of the message, something that I love so much about this church. Because you remember that, you guys may not remember this, it's almost exactly a year since the first time I spoke here, when I was on Pulpit Supply at the time. And I was off for a few months. I said, let me go crash a party, right, sort of thing. right? So I got to speak here. And then ultimately, when we got into the call process, do you remember kind of what I said? Right? Is that I said, the way I see it, there are kind of two options. That if this is a church that wants to keep doing what it's always done, I completely understand that. I completely respect that. But don't call me, because it's not going to be a fit. But I said, but if you are a church that wants to go forward, who is willing to grow and change and do what it takes to make sure that this church is here for the next generation, to build this church for a future we may not even see ourselves, I said, then I think I would love to be here and be on that journey with you. And as a church, you overwhelmingly voted to go forward, to be a church that was not going to hit pause. It says we're going to do what it takes to go forward. And so as we kind of get into this last third of the year, right? This is the time of the year where we start thinking about what do we want to do next year, right? And as we do that, we start thinking about what are our major goals for next year? And certainly for me is to continue this process and kind of move into the next level of this process of trying to reach further into the community, to try to make, you know, a bigger difference in the community, to connect with more people, to do what it takes to reach people. Because my friends, living as a disciple sometimes is scary, sometimes it's overwhelming, it is often exhausting. And we will all have times where we wonder if Jesus is asleep, right? We're in the boat, the storm's raging. Is Jesus asleep? Does he even care? And he does care. But then sometimes when we're really struggling, we wonder if Jesus is even with us. But how can we be sure if he's actually with us? Well, if we make it a point to follow him, and our decisions are based on following him, he can't be anywhere else, right? Even if we don't see him, even if we don't know what's going on, we're following him, which means he is with us. So as we kind of embark on kind of the next journey, the kind of the next year ahead, I want us to be confident in this choice to not hit pause, to not say that, well, you know what? It'll be here until I die. That's the end of my responsibility, right? Our responsibility is to make sure it's here for us afterwards. And I'm so grateful that you invited me to be part of that. And I'm really excited about the time ahead.